W233AH Monticello.
From WJFF in Liberty, this is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. On today's show, Sullivan 180, helping turn around the health of the county's residents and now working with firefighters to do so. We'll have information from Tricia Rubio talking to Sullivan 180 today. Aaron Shearer from Eating Upstate is here with a profile of Tiny's in Hamden. It's Pride Time with Dale Braygrove. And we'll also speak to the owner of the new Ruffled Grouse Gallery in Narrowsburg. It's our fall favorites fun drive. We're listener-supported public radio for the Catskills in Northeast Pennsylvania, and we are looking for your support today. Call us at 845-482-4141 or go online, make a donation of any amount at wjffradio.org. First, the news from NPR.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Giles Snyder. President Biden is connecting the attack on House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband to the January 6th insurrection on the U.S. Capitol. NPR's Asma Khalid reports on Biden's remarks in Pennsylvania.
Biden cited news reports that the man in custody for the attack was shouting, "Where is Nancy?" as he invaded the Pelosi's home. It was a phrase, the president said, that mirrored the chant used by some attackers during the January 6th riot. Biden condemned the attack on Pelosi's husband as despicable.
Enough is enough is enough. Every person of good conscience needs to clearly and unambiguously stand up against the violence in our politics, regardless what your politics are.
The president asked, what makes us think one party can talk about stolen elections and spread lies without corroding the political climate? Asma Khalid, NPR News.
Speaker Pelosi's husband recovering from surgery. Paul Pelosi suffered a fractured skull and injuries to his right arm and hands. In Arizona, Maricopa County Sheriff Paul Pinzon says his office is providing security around ballot drop boxes in response to complaints that early voters are being harassed by so-called watchers. He says authorities are seeing fewer armed watchers, but he says any intimidation will not be tolerated.
It is a growing toxic problem where individuals feel that it is appropriate to use forms of intimidation and threats to try to influence political outcomes. They are jeopardizing the safety and the well-being of good public servants and volunteers and others who work in this capacity that come from all walks of life.
Authorities are monitoring intimidation complaints as a federal judge in Arizona, a Trump appointee, refused to bar a group from taking pictures of voters dropping off their ballot, citing their First Amendment rights. But he said the case remains open, so the plaintiffs could try to argue their case again. The Education Department has announced changes to a student loan program that eases repayment for workers in some public sector education and nonprofit jobs. NPR's Sequoia Carrillo reports.
The Education Department is permanently expanding what types of payments count as qualifying in the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program. Under the new regulations, borrowers can receive credit towards loan payments that are made late, in installments, or in a lump sum. Prior rules would disqualify a payment if it was even a few cents short or late more than 15 days. The department also clarified that full-time employment in qualifying jobs is now defined as 30 hours per week, with more specific guidelines for adjunct faculty and lecturers. The new regulations expand the types of situations when a borrower can defer or pause their payments. Before the change, deferment for things like cancer treatment or economic hardship could derail borrowers in the program. Sequoia Carrillo, NPR News.
And this is NPR. Iranian expats around the world forming human chains today to show their support for the anti-government protests sparked by the death of a 22-year-old Kurdish woman in the custody of Iran's morality police. BBC's Sebastian Usher reports on the first group in New Zealand.
In the early morning rain in the New Zealand capital, Wellington, a group of expatriate Iranians held hands and chanted their defiance of the Iranian authorities. Iranian activists are planning to hold similar events throughout the day in locations across the world to show their solidarity with their fellow Iranians. In another high-profile show of support, the Iranian singer Golshifteh joined Coldplay on stage in Buenos Aires to sing Baraye, the song listing the many reasons to protest that's become the anthem of the movement.
The head of Iran's Revolutionary Guards is warning that today will be the protesters' last day to take to the streets. In Major League Baseball, the Philadelphia Phillies took Game 1 of the World Series from the Houston Astros, as NPR's Dave Mistich reports.
Astros outfielder Kyle Tucker belted two home runs, helping to put his team up 5-0 at the end of the third inning. But Philadelphia countered with three runs in the fourth and two more in the fifth, tying it up on JT Realmuto's two RBI double off the wall and left. The Phillies catcher went on to blast a go-ahead solo home run in the top of the 10th. In Houston's part of the 10th, Phillies reliever David Robertson struggled with control, allowing two base runners before getting the win on a ground out to third base. Game 2 of the series is set for tonight in Houston. Dave Mistich, NPR News.
And I'm Giles Snyder. This is NPR News from Washington.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Eric and Wendy Schmidt through the Schmidt Family Foundation, working together to create a just world where all people have access to renewable energy, clean air and water, and healthy food. On the web at theschmidt.org.
This is Radio Chatskill. I'm Tim Bruno. It's our Fall Favorites Fun Drive. Call with your support, 845-482-4141 or wjffradio.org. Make a donation of any amount to keep public radio in the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. And your donation supports this show. Radio Chatskill comes to you every Saturday at 10, a mix of news, information, arts, and entertainment. And we have regular contributors that contribute to the show as well. One of them is our very own Patricio Rubio, and he spoke with Sullivan 180 about their latest effort to help with firefighters.
Lindsay, thank you so much. You are the outreach coordinator for Sullivan 180, but you're also a member of the Monticello Fire Department. Is that right?
I am. I am a member, also the vice president of Monticello Fire Department, and I'm a commissioner for the Joint Fire District.
Sullivan 180 is here to help turn the tide of us being the second to last in the health rankings, and they have a new challenge for the fire departments. Lindsay, what is the healthiest fire department challenge?
Well, this really stems from our Encouraging Healthier Behavior Challenge that we launched to our community last October. We're really encouraging our businesses, our community members to just make better and healthier decisions. And we thought if we made it a challenge, it would get a little bit more interesting, and hopefully these habits or these challenges would turn into habits. But we wanted to kind of go towards our demographic, one at a time. And obviously my passion is in the fire department. So we said, let's go after our fire departments, and we most certainly have.
Wow, that's great. When does this Healthiest Fire Department Challenge start?
So this is going to launch January 1st. It's going to run 8 months and end at our Sullivan County Firemen's Parade next September.
Wow, that's great. Have all the fire departments signed up for this, or are you still recruiting?
So we have 40 fire departments throughout Sullivan County, and they enter themselves into the competition. They have contacted me. I'm going out to all the departments, traveling throughout the county, which has been an awesome experience. I go and I present the challenge, and they commit. And so far, we really have a great turnout. We have some departments that are really into this, already involved. Really, really excited to watch this unfold starting January.
Wow, 40 departments in the county. I didn't know we had that many. So when the challenge starts, what do the fire departments have to do to, try to win this challenge?
So we've made a range of challenges to be sure that they are attainable by all departments. So whether the department has a member count of 6 or 60, that does not matter. The challenges are really simple. The criteria is that you make a healthier decision, whether it be physical, mental behavior. And so put on your gear and hop on one of our O&W trails with your department, or choose a healthy drill night meal. Fire departments, we know it's pizza. We're busy. We're already trying to balance work and home and volunteerism. And so it's easy and it's quick. Well, let's put a little bit more thought into it and make a healthier meal. We've teamed up with Garnet Health, which is unbelievable. Garnet is giving us 7 of their doctors that are willing to travel to each department and talk to them about, you know, the dangers of sleep deprivation in the firematic world, and cardiologists. And, you know, 70% of our firefighters are either overweight, diabetic, pre-diabetic. So Garnet is giving us an endocrinologist. And again, these doctors are willing to drive to all these departments throughout the county, talk, give them resources, and encourage our men and women to make better decisions about their health.
Yeah, you know, the volunteer fire departments are, it's sometimes a thankless jobs. You know, they're not getting paid for this, and they're risking their lives. So we want to keep them healthy, because we never know when we are going to have to use them. So when the firefighters are doing this challenge, what are some of the metrics they have to sort of achieve to sort of gain points, or what do you have to do sort of, you know, get to the top of the line to sort of help win this challenge?
Yep. So the department chooses a point of contact that they believe, you know, is really going to run with this challenge and kind of lead the department throughout these next 8 months. So the department, you know, completes the challenge, takes a picture of it, gives a small description of what they've done, and they upload it to our Sullivan 180 site. Our site will be live streaming these points, so you'll be able to see what departments are in the lead. Also, bi-weekly, we'll be putting these statistics in the newspapers. We will be broadcasting them on our county radio stations. It's really going to be a true competition, and we'll see who's leading. You know, in doing this, like I said, volunteerism, we're busy. It's hard. We're tired. And we knew that there had to be some sort of incentive at the end to really help these men and women and encourage them, you know, to keep going throughout these 8 months. Our departments say we need. We're a lot of these departments are in need. So we decided to provide a grant. And we went to Aileen Gunther. Aileen has been, our assemblywoman, has been so supportive of our departments all along. She's not only the person that goes to, let's say, the roast beef dinner, she's the one who's in the kitchen behind the grill. So we went to her with this challenge, and she said this is an important initiative. These men and women are our heroes. And she funded us with $25,000 for this challenge. So first place fire department will be $15,000 grant. Second place will be a $10,000 grant. And along the way from our community members, we have smaller prizes. To really be sure that these departments stay encouraged within these next 8 months.
Well, that's great. You know, these volunteer firefighters are, like I said, have a need and a financial need. So that money could go a long way getting new equipment or help pay for training that's needed for their volunteer firefighters and personnel.
Yes, these grants, like you said, go a long way. This helps our departments make sure that they have the correct safety equipment, safety gear, to enhance their training, and you know, just it's safety. And we need to give back to the men and women that give to us all hours of the night. You know, we leave our houses, our families. Spend a lot of time away from our families throughout the night in any type of weather, and it's really important that we give back to them.
Definitely. So, you know, we said before, it's a thankless job. You know, they're out in the summer. The summer was busy with the wildfires and the regular fires. Now the winter is coming up, and it's always a rush of chimney fires, and you going out there in sub-zero weather sometimes. So it's, like I said, it's a thankless job, and we are so thankful. I will say thank you to all the volunteer firefighters out there, because, you know, it's they're doing it. They're volunteering the time to do this. So the winner, I just want to make sure I heard this right. The winner of this challenge will be announced at next year's Firemen's Parade. Is that correct?
Yes. So throughout the county, anybody can hop on our website, Sullivan180.org, and they can watch this challenge unfold over the next 8 months. You'll be able to see a live stream of the departments that are in the lead. And then, of course, at our Sullivan County Firemen's Parade, we will announce the winner, and we will be providing, again, $15,000 for first place and second place $10,000 grant to our much-deserving department.
Yes, definitely. Lindsay, before we go, is there anything else we have not touched on that you want our listeners to know about the Healthiest Fire Department Challenge that's starting next January?
If you've always wondered how you can thank these men and women that are here to really serve you, put themselves at risk to serve you, you can be involved in the challenge. For more information, you can contact me at lweet@sullivan180.org, and you can find out how you can sponsor a fire department with our Turtle Awards. So again, if you don't know how to say thank you, we have a way. And to become part of this challenge, again, please contact me, lweet@sullivan180.org.
That's great that, you know, the public can get involved in this challenge and help support their firefighters. And you said to get more information is to for them to email you, is lweet@sullivan180.org. Is that correct?
It is. You know, these men and women are there to protect your businesses, protect your homes. So if you'd like to give back, this challenge is a way for your business to say thank you and to support your local fire department.
We were talking to Lindsay Wheat, the outreach coordinator for Sullivan 180, talking about the Healthiest Fire Department Challenge that's starting next January. So for more information, email Lindsay at lweet@sullivan180. Thank you so much for joining us on the program. I look forward to seeing who will win the Healthiest Fire Department Challenge.
Thank you so much. This is going to be a really exciting 8 months. It'll be a lot of fun. So we ask our community to keep track and join in on this challenge.
For Radio Catskill, I'm Patricio Rubio.
Patricia Rabaya, one of the many contributors to help make Radio Chatskill happen every Saturday at 10, and listeners like you make it happen, as well as making this station happen by donating during our Fall Favorites Fun Drive. Call us 845-482-4141 or go to wjffradio.org and make a donation of any amount. One of the other contributors that makes the show possible is Aaron Shearer from Eating Upstate, and Aaron is on the line right now. Aaron, good morning. How are you?
Really good. It's a really gorgeous morning. How is it in Liberty?
It's fantastic. It's warming up. We're going to get up to around 50 degrees. You know, I always like it when the National Weather Service has a forecast like today. They say plentiful sunshine. So it's a lovely day. I'm also here in the studio with Valerie Manzi, who's getting ready for our open house. Aaron, we're having an open house here from 11 to 4. And Val, we're all set. We've got coffee. We've got treats.
We do. We've been busy, busy, busy here. And we're hoping folks will stop by and say hello to us. And you'll get a tour of our beautiful new studio and see where all this wonderful programming is emanating from.
See the magic in action. See your donation in action, too. Drop off a donation while you're here. We also have our tote bags, hats, and T-shirts available for you. We might have a few extra music sale items for you to take home, too.
Good.
It's a preview of the music sale, we shall say. Aaron, I don't know if you've met Val, if you guys have met. Aaron is one of our regular monthly contributors or so, and she goes around the state, upstate, to eat, basically.
To eat. I love that.
Eating Upstate is what it's called. Aaron, can you just tell listeners who may not be familiar with it what you like to do?
So I have written about farm to table and local beverages and food related beverage related writing for the better part of 10 years, and starting in December of last year, I began contributing to WJFF, highlighting some of these not always farm-to-table establishments, but some of these newer ones that have popped up in the Sullivan County and sometimes Delaware County area, which is actually what is the subject of Eating Upstate today, which is out of Delaware County.
Yeah, and that's called Tiny's. Tell us a little bit about Tiny's.
All right, so Tiny's is run by Antonio Mora. He was one of those that moved up to the Catskills from New York City during the pandemic. And he, for a while, was running Tiny's out of Russell General Store in Bovina in Delaware County. And now he's moved it to the Hamden General Store, which is also in Delaware County. And I would say that Tiny's is about a 45-minute drive from, depending on what part of Sullivan County you're driving from, but it is wonderful food, and I am highly suggest that you go, and this segment will tell you more about it, and I said this before. Antonio is a almost 30-year veteran of the New York City restaurant scene, and he kind of, you know, the pandemic was an opportunity for him to slow down, and he moved up here, and it sounds like he's going to be living here permanently. So yeah. I hope you all enjoy it.
Okay, that's great. And remember to call us during our fun drive. Help us meet a challenge. We have a $250 challenge, 845-482-4141. Or Val, are there other ways to give?
Yes, there are other ways to give. You can come by today. Well, you can come by anytime.
Yeah, but come see the open house from 11 to 4.
Yeah, WJFFradio.org. Or you can text GIVE. 2-845-203-3939.
All right, here's Eating Upstate with Aaron Shearer on Radio Chatskill.
According to an analysis of Census Bureau data published by Cornell University earlier this year, parts of the Catskill saw serious population growth as a result of the pandemic. Sullivan County alone saw a surge of over 1,100 new residents during 2020. Neighboring Delaware County saw a more modest increase of 70 residents. Among those new residents was Antonio Mora, who brought with him nearly 30 years of experience working in New York City restaurants. Antonio Mora and his business, Tiny's, currently located at the Hamden General Store in Hamden, is the subject of today's Eating Upstate. Antonio Mora grew up in Manhattan in the Bronx, and studied fine arts at the Fashion Institute of Technology. He began working in restaurants in 1994 and spent his entire professional life until March of 2020 working in New York City. Among the restaurants he worked at over the years was Frankie's and Prime Meats, where he met Sohail and Sarah Zandi, whose restaurant Brushland Eating House I profiled back in April. At the time the pandemic hit in March of 2020, he was working as the chef at Quality Meats, located in the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and he found himself furloughed from his job. Here's Antonio.
I think a lot of it has to do with like growing up in New York City. I always, as a kid, wanted to leave New York City. I just loved being outdoors. When I came up to this part of the Catskills, I kind of just fell in love with it. It's beautiful up here. And that's really it. It's not nothing more complicated than that. I had some good friends like Sarah and Sohail and some other friends that I had worked with up here. And I just would visit a lot, like get out of the city, you know, working in high-paced, big restaurants in the city. I just want to get out and take days off and explore. And I kind of fell in love with the area up here.
But his old friends Sohail and Sarah had an opportunity waiting for him in the Catskills. Sohail and Sarah had leased out Russell's General Store down the road from Brushland Eating House in Bovina, but they had closed it due to the pandemic. Antonio moved up to the Catskills and teamed up with Maggie McDowell, who had previously worked with Antonio at Frankie's and Prime Meats alongside Sohail and Sarah. Antonio launched his own business, Tiny's, taken from his nickname, and began operating it within the store. I'll let Sohail explain the rest. Here's an interview I did with Sohail in October of 2021.
Antonio is a good friend of mine from when we used to live in the city, and Maggie actually used to work at the restaurant here, and she had started kind of a little pie business, and, you know, there was an opportunity during COVID to sort of, like, people did a lot more, they wanted provisions, so her pie business kind of took off, and she started making the pies out of there, and Antonio moved upstate after a long time of thinking about it, and so he basically we run the store at this point. We still manage the store. We still oversee all the operations. But they have kind of, I would say, like micro businesses inside where Antonio does all the like sandwiches and food. And Maggie does a lot of like the prepared pastries and stuff like that. And then they take home all the money they make for themselves. And then the store operates sort of on the shelves and the drinks and the other things that kind of live in the store, which are again, it's a large umbrella that we oversee, but the income streams are kind of split up in that way.
A couple of months after I conducted that interview with Sohail, he and Sarah decided not to renew their lease of Russell's General Store, which is owned by the Bovina Historical Society. In the meantime, Antonio consulted on the menu at the Andes Hotel in Andes. Eventually, he met Amy Crawford, who had recently opened Hamden General Store. Amy works as a public defender in the Bronx, but comes up on the weekends and occasionally works remotely from the Hamden property she inherited. The Hamden General Store has had previous incarnations as a hardware store and a general store, and more recently as Lucky Dog Cafe. Amy bought and reopened the store during the pandemic as a way to better cultivate community and was looking for a dining component to add to her operation.
So I had finished the job in Andes, and I had some friends who lived near the Hamden General Store, and they knew that Amy wanted to run, you know, that store has been, you know, these general stores that are up here, they've been different iterations, but they've always had food and stuff. And Amy was just looking for somebody to help run the culinary program, and I was looking for a new place to make sandwiches. And I think three of our mutual friends, and we had never met, three of our mutual friends were like, you guys would be perfect together. And we talked and we hit it off. And then like 3 weeks later, I opened up the Tiny's concept inside the Hamden General Store, and it's been working out really nice.
This past Labor Day weekend, Tiny's reopened at the Hamden General Store. It features many holdovers that Antonio served at Russell's, like his bacon, egg, and cheese, BLT, and chopped cheese sandwiches. Tiny sources pork from the Woodchuck Hollow Farm in Hamden and bread from Wilson's Bread in Andes. He also sources from Heller's Farm in Germantown, Columbia County, Berry Brook Farm in Hamden, as well as Rock Royal Farm in Walton.
You know, there's so many farms around. When you go to the farmer's market on Wednesday, you take a little bit from everybody. When you work in New York City, you meet farmers, but you go to the farmer's market and stuff, but you're a little bit disconnected from what's from the produce. And up here, it's this part of the Catskills in the summer. It's so bountiful. There's so much produce, but then you're also living in this small community, and you're like, when you go to the store, you see them, you see these people become your friends, and they become part of your community, and it's not just like a transactional thing. It's actually, you become friends, and then they become a part of your life. So it feels so nice. Like, everybody's supporting each other. Everybody's looking out for each other. When you need a favor or you need something, people are always there to help out. And like that is like a really special part of my experience of moving up here and kind of, you know, not being in a big city. There's just a lot more of a family vibe, for lack of a better word.
Some of Tiny's old customers from Russell's have found their way to Hamden. His former work partner at Russell's, Maggie McDowell, plans to join him on occasion.
It's been great. The community is super supportive, and some people didn't know where I was, and now they do. And then I have a lot of like regular customers, so it's been really nice. I think it's like, I'm happy to be doing it, and they're happy that I'm back doing egg sandwiches. So it's been really good.
As a lifelong resident of the metropolitan New York City area, Antonio has had to make some adjustments. But for him, the benefits far outweigh the cost.
I think the biggest adjustment is being still and not feeling like, you know, it was very hard for me to adjust to this sense of my productivity was linked to my self-worth and who I was as a person. And I've had this like kind of these moments where I'm like, oh, like I can sit, be still and not have to rush, not have to like just push through the day. And like, it's just been like a really peaceful kind of transition and learning to be still and take my time and do things a pace that I want to has been like really life changing. I've been cooking since like in professional kitchens since 1994, so almost 30 years. I think I just got to a point in my career where I was getting burned out, for lack of a better word. You know, it wasn't because of my ex-employer or anything like that. I just wanted something for myself, something that was a kind of like a real true expression of who I am and what I want to make. And just through like happenstance and happy, you know, I fell into the Russell's thing and started making the egg sandwich. And there was this connection between me and the customers and the community. And it just kind of like was like a really special experience. And I put all of that knowledge of those 30 years of experience into just making sandwiches, into that egg sandwich, into organizing my station, into like everything. And it just felt at that time, and even now, it just felt really right. And I think there was something like missing. There was like a, you know, but I think it's just also just part of working in an industry for 30 years. You get tired sometimes. I also feel like probably leaving New York City and those big kitchens probably added some years to my life as well.
Tiny's is open Thursday through Sunday at the Hamden General Store, located at 35796 State Route 10 in Hamden. I'm Erin Shear. Eating Upstate is a production of WJFF Radio Catskill.
And thanks to Erin for that. She brings us these wonderful segments of wonderful restaurants in the Catskills throughout the year. And you can help support that work by donating during our Fall Favorites Fund Drive right now at 845-482-4141. Plenty of volunteers here getting ready for our open house to talk to you. Or you can just come by our open house and drop off your donation. We're at 2758 New York 52 here in Liberty. Come see the new digs, grab some coffee and treats, and, you know, we'd be happy to show you around. 845-482-4141 is the number to call, or the website is wjffradio.org if you're not able to make it over today. One of the other contributors to Radio Chatskill is somebody who already has a show that they work on, but they have so much stuff that they like to do. They help to give us some other information and news around the area. That's our own Rosie Starr from Farm and Country. And she is visiting Ruffled Grouse Gallery, a new gallery in Narrowsburg. This is Radio Chatskill.
For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr in Narrowsburg, New York. 144 Main Street is home to a small gallery. Their exterior renovation caught my eye earlier this year, and I've taken the opportunity to poke my head into the Ruffed Grouse Gallery. Owner Ryan Ward is available to show me around and speak to us about the Ruffed Grouse. Ryan, please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your background and what brought you into Narrowsburg.
Thank you so much for visiting the gallery, Rosie. I really appreciate it. My name is Ryan Ward. I'm the owner, director of the Ruff Grouse Gallery, which is about 6 weeks old at this point. We had the grand kickoff inaugural exhibition Labor Day weekend, and which was a real success. We had a large crowd out here with live music and all the bells and whistles as the grand opening of this new venture. I initially was introduced to Narrowsburg. Funny enough, I had been visiting Honesdale for about 15 years from Scranton, which is where my day job is with the curation of the Maslow collection at Marywood University. And I had no idea until somebody suggested that Narrowsburg was right up the road from Honesdale. And so a few friends and I made that 15-minute trek up the road, and we were immediately welcomed into the community, especially the creative community here, and became part of the Deepwater Literary Festival that inaugural year. And that was only 4 years ago. And so from there, I really hit the ground running and have looked to become more and more involved with the town, with the community, the different festivals, the events. And as that momentum was getting going and my wheels were turning, I thought, what about an old-fashioned brick-and-mortar type of art gallery here in Narrowsburg, and I ran with the idea, and we had the big kickoff only 6 weeks ago, and it's been really an amazing reception from the town, from all sorts of art lovers, the folks that are involved in the art world in a lot of different capacities, and just visitors to town as well. So it's been wonderful so far.
Your first exhibit is still up here. Talk a little bit about this exhibit, because I know it won't be up for much longer, but it caught my eye because of the subject matter. The artwork that's in here now is very much folk.
This opening exhibition is comprised of over 50 different self-taught or outsider artists, and we can talk about those terms and how they apply, but generally speaking, that refers to a non-academic artist, someone that did not receive training. That's really the umbrella term is self-taught. But we also use a lot of different terms as vernacular or folk art or art brut or naive art. All of these kind of are interchangeable. But I decided to really highlight what type of art and artwork I would emphasize here in the gallery by using folk, self-taught, and contemporary. So to kick things off, I wanted to showcase this grouping of artwork that really comes from all different sources and locations. Many artists are from the American South, but others are from northeastern Pennsylvania or New York or the northeast part of the country. And they come from me gathering these from many different sources. And as it turns out, some of these artists are really well-known in the outsider art world. William Hawkins, Jimmy Lee Suduth, Justin McCarthy, Mose Tolliver, Pearl Blavelt, and others. But I've also included and featured artists that are completely anonymous, but that I think have created terrific, amazing artworks. And so part of my goal here at the galleries is sort of level the field, so to speak, in that sense, and really include what I believe to be high-quality, thought-provoking, beautiful artwork.
And it really is. Tell the audience a little bit about what the subject matter is.
So what we're looking at here are drawings of all kinds and sizes and paintings, oil paintings, paintings made with mud and house paint. We're looking at carvings, wood carvings from Georgia that were made from branches and stumps and that type of thing. We're looking at some ceramic pieces, and many are figurative in terms of subject matter. Some depict landscapes, even religious scenes. There's a hooked rug, a tapestry that's a maple syrup harvesting scene, which is beautiful. You'll notice that it absolutely does have a kind of country or rustic feel to the aesthetic, with landscape happening, with the quality of a horse and rider carving and et cetera. It really runs a wide range, but the common thread is that this artwork came from a really authentic and genuine place that where these artists just needed to make the work. That's why we love this type of artwork. We love to look at it and enjoy it because it has this direct quality, this directness. The artist didn't think about, oh, it has to fit into some grander scheme of things in an art world or in a context or anything like that. That's why we use terms like raw and immediate to describe this kind of artwork. And that's what always brought me to it. And that's why I gravitate towards it. And that's why a lot of other people are continuing to gravitate towards it. And this kind of part of the art world is really growing.
Well, I feel that it's very suited to the environment inside of the gallery. Tell us a little bit about the renovations that you made inside of here in the Ruffed Grouse.
To fill you in on the changes that I made to the space itself, it gets back to the name originally that I had in mind for really 12 or 15 years. I had this Ruffed Grouse name in mind, and I didn't know exactly how I would use it down the road. I thought, oh, what if I ever opened a bar or restaurant, which I really have no plans to do. But when I came up with the concept for the gallery, I thought, oh, that would actually make a perfect name for a couple different reasons. I have my Pennsylvania roots and history, and I'm coming over to the New York state side, and it's the Pennsylvania state bird, and it's a beautiful bird. And in the name, it has ruff, and we're talking about kind of rough artwork. We're talking about artists that were not really accepted in any kind of mainstream channels. And so I like that aspect. That's actually in the name. And I started to envision a kind of a sign and with the name and an aesthetic from there, and a general feel to the space itself, which went along the lines of an English tavern or Irish pub kind of feel. And that's what we ran with. And so you have the deeper wine colors on the walls, the burgundies, the brass light fixtures, and kind of a rustic lounge upstairs with a kind of bearskin rug. And so I really did not want to aim for the white cube look at all, because this is not New York City. We see that all the time. We see the conventional white cube space, the clean space, and that's fine, but I really wanted to go for something welcoming and warm and inviting.
Mm-hmm. Well, you absolutely did accomplish that.
I would like to add that Alessandra at the Velvet Maple was instrumental in the design work here in the space, the color palettes, the rugs, the fixtures, etc. So I really want to give her a lot of credit as well.
She's very talented. I don't know if the proper word is feng shui, or she's just very trained in the eye for color and placement.
That's absolutely correct. She's very skilled, very skilled. And really, this was a big collaboration with other friends as well, with the sign and some of the graphic design and the painting on the sign. And so I'm really grateful, very grateful for the help, the support. I felt so much support from everybody in the community, and I'm so thankful.
Before we move on to what's coming up in your new exhibit, I'd like to note that you are on exhibit as an artist right down the street at the DVAA on Main Street in Narrowsburg. You're exhibiting as an artist. How does that feel to have a presence on Main Street as a curator and an artist?
Right. It's been pretty wild timing, because the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance exhibition was planned for 2 or 3 years, and then scheduling was moved around, and it happened to coincide with the grand opening of the Rough Grouse. So needless to say, it's been kind of a busy period, but I've been really excited, again, just because I've been such a warm welcome into this town and this community. And so to have the opportunity at DVAA to showcase my own work and have those discussions and receive that feedback is wonderful, because I can do it with the same folks down here at the gallery and send people back and forth. And so I've been really excited about the DVA show and the artist talk last weekend. It's up through October 30th. You can definitely see the roots that I have and the inclinations I have towards folk art in my own work up in the exhibition. I mean, there's no denying that. That has a lot to do with being raised around family members that were making wood carvings and furniture and kind of some of that in the Pennsylvania Dutch, Pennsylvania German traditions. But really, that's my whole upbringing artistically and creatively, is around using the materials that are directly accessible around you in your surroundings and making something out of nothing in that sense. And so I've received really great feedback along those lines, with people, viewers, seeing my own work, it clicks for them. Oh, this is why you would open a venture like this folk art outsider art gallery. And so it's a really neat connection there.
Well, your exhibit at the Delaware Valley Arts Alliance is called 321 Ring Baloney.
This body of work at DVA happens to deal with themes around the circus or carnival or amusement parks or rodeos and that environment, and how bizarre that setting can be. And because it has to do a lot with kind of like a contrived fun. And for me, those settings are kind of tragic almost. And I've used the carnival, the circus, as a metaphor to talk about how we live and how fact and fiction is very blurry these days in lots of categories. And so that's what many of my paintings and sculptures have to deal with in the exhibition.
What is up next for this gallery?
We are very, very excited to have paintings by Terry Ekasala on November 12th. That is the opening reception date, from 5 o'clock to 8 o'clock p.m. And she is a brilliant, brilliant painter from Vermont who has had an extensive career, very accomplished career in Florida, in Paris, in many locations. She's exhibited all over. And in my opinion, you know, she deserves much more exhibition opportunities. And I'm thrilled to be able to showcase her work, which will be large-scale paintings, oil and linens, to smaller, more intimately scaled paintings on paper, running the range from semi-abstract to semi-figurative to really recognizable portraits and heads. But they're extremely beautiful and playful and witty, yet sophisticated and smart, and they have a lot of gravity to them. It really touches on the whole range of emotions within her work, and I couldn't be happier to be opening that show on November 12th.
Before we close, is there anything else you'd like to add to our conversation that I haven't covered?
I want folks to know that this is really an inviting place, a welcoming place. You don't have to have some grand knowledge or esoteric knowledge of the art world or art making to come through and visit. And I just want people to come and enjoy the work and engage in the ongoing conversation.
And how would you suggest people contact you?
Always check in on the Instagram page. It's Ruffed Grouse Gallery. Just underscore between the Ruffed Grouse Gallery. And I'm posting new artwork that's coming through the gallery on there, new exhibitions, and you can stay up to date that way.
Well, thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Thank you, Rosie. I really appreciate it.
And this is Radio Chatskill. We are talking to some of our contributors, or hearing from some of our contributors to Chatskill today that make it all possible, and listeners make it possible too, with donations during our Fall Favorites Fun Drive on right now. I'm Tim Bruno, joined in the studio by Val Manzi. And Val, folks know that they can call 845-482-4141. They know they can go to wjffradio.org. But today, a special treat, we have an open house.
We have an open house beginning at 11, and we've got a lot of treats and good, delicious coffee from Two Queens, and some wonderful baked goods and some nice company. And you can come by and see our studio and chat with us and enjoy this beautiful weather.
Come by. It's 2758 State Route 52 in Liberty. And we'd love to see you. We have our hats, totes, and t-shirts out there for purchase. And you can drop off your donation too during our Fall Favorites Fun Drive. One of our other contributors to Radio Chatskill is Dale Blagrove. He brings us Pride Time each month, and he's talking to his friend Erwin. I forgot his name, but I'm sure he's going to introduce him right now.
I'm here with Brian. We're going to have a great talk today about what's on everybody's mind.
And what is on everybody's mind, Dale?
Oh my gosh, the movie and the media. But we want to talk briefly about bros, and then we're going to talk about really how we are represented, and there are. So there was a lot of controversy over Bros because it didn't do maybe as successful as they wanted to at the box office. I personally thought it was a streaming kind of movie. It was nice, and it was entertainment. Did you have a chance to see it?
I did have a chance to see it.
Where did you see it?
I saw it the day it came out.
At the movies?
Yes. I went to the theaters, like a classic moviegoer, and I saw it in theaters.
How was it?
It was good. I liked it. I enjoyed it. I do have to say, though, that for me, there were some issues around representation. There's also some just structural issues that I had with it in terms of how the movie was made. And yes, I do agree that the marketing was terrible. But overall, I thought that it was a very enjoyable movie.
Okay, but was it a big screen movie, or was it something that you could have waited a couple of weeks to see it on streaming?
I could have waited to see it on
TV. Yeah, see, and that was kind of my feeling as well. The market and things like that have changed because streaming services make things easier. But still, you know, I think the overall idea of the movie was really good. You know, I like the idea that when we have a movie, I do think we should support it because there's so few out there. I understand the goals of what they were trying to achieve. I just don't think they did it the right way. But the story itself, I have to admit, it was kind of cute.
It was cute. I did enjoy it. I thought that it was very nice. It was funny. I thought that they relied a little bit too much on stereotypes.
Right.
Cliche can be funny, and they did a bunch of cliche things. But I thought overall that they relied too heavily on stereotypes.
Right.
And I blame that on the writing.
So when you say stereotypes, is that stereotypes the way that a representative or so of the transgender community or the lesbian, they were very big on the bi community for some reason in this particular movie?
Well, you know, we have to recognize that there are bi people in the world. Not everyone is gay or straight or lesbian.
Okay, oh, that's a whole different argument. We're not going to go... I understand. And we're just so not going to go down there today. But, you know, I like the idea of the story. There are, you know, I was really being out there, right? And I do get the whole idea that it's the first major LGBT plus movie released by a major studio. So that was a huge plus. And I give them credit for that. What I do lack on the credit of giving is I think, again, some of the, there were a lot of things that were stereotyped. And they try to use stereotypes to get around adding any content around diversity.
Yes. So the opening scene of the movie, in case you haven't seen it, I'm not ruining anything for you. The opening scene...
Oh, I'll ruin it.
Is a meta version of what I'm assuming happened at the pitch meeting for this movie, where it is Billy Eichner sitting across from a, you know, studio exec, and the studio exec goes, "Can you make a gay movie, but for straight people?" And he goes, "No, I can't make a movie for straight people because gay people are different." He's like, "We lied to you." He's like, "We are not just like you." He's like, "We're different." And it's true.
We're better.
But the thing is that the movie, to me, did not live up to that very first scene.
Okay.
It set a high bar and then continually fell short of it. Right. It didn't, like, fall short like you were trying to reach, you know, a 10-foot bar and, you know, you only got, like, a foot off the air. It got a decent way up there, but for me, it didn't go as far as I wanted it to in terms of being representative of the LGBTQ community.
Sure. You know, I felt from watching it, I've been following Billy Eichner throughout his career, you know, over the years. For me, it just really came across as a therapy session for him, and because I was never really a big fan of his to begin with, forced myself to like the movie because it was the movie, you know, for the community. But again, but I went to the movie because I felt that I had to support our community.
I will say, if you like Billy Eichner, you can see the movie with no issue. Mm-hmm. If you have small issue with Billy Eichner, it's a lot.
Oh yeah.
Because it's an hour and a half of him being himself, which is great, and he can be really funny, but it's just, it can be a lot.
It is, but you know, I do have to admit, towards the end...
Oh, it was definitely funny. Oh my God, it was, there were some parts where I was really the whole scene where they first hooked up, I was laughing so hard.
Yeah. No, but I was gonna say, towards the end of the movie, I actually shed a tear. So it had like an emotional grab to me, right? So,
it was.
And I have no emotions.
Yes, it had some very big emotional moments in it. And that's why, like I said, it was a good movie. I will watch it again.
So I get that. And I think the good part about it is that this season, incredible season, this holiday, where they're going to be a lot of different types of LGBT type of movies, which I'm excited. Even to the degree I'm almost excited that I may even turn on the Hallmark Channel because they actually have, I think it's 2 LGBT movies that are coming out the holiday season. It's also cuffing season. For those that don't know, that I want to put out there. And I don't know, where do you look for your LGBT plus type movies?
Well, one of the great things now about looking for LGBTQ movies is most streaming services have a section where you can look under for LGBTQ movies. Right. And it will cover a huge range of films, and whether it be comedy, horror, like dramas, right. There is a wide range out there. Most of them are made by smaller studios, so they have smaller budgets, which usually means that they have to rely on their writing and their content to really get themselves out there and make a name for themselves.
Right. And, you know, those services include Canopy, that you can get if you have a library card. You can have access to Canopy for free. There's Netflix, and there is also Amazon Prime. Mm-hmm. Has a great selection. I've gone through most of the movies on Amazon Prime. Now, a little bit beyond that is, of course, we have Here TV.
Yes.
So Here TV is a great option just to watch LGBT-focused materials or content, which is great. And then just recently, I'm not going into a lot of detail, but there's also Out TV, where you can connect and watch some later-to-be-discovered people. I don't know. That's the best that I can say for it, right? It's definitely like someone's like... it has to be somebody's MBA project that they're working on. That's the closest that I can come to it. But it is kind of interesting. So we definitely have a lot of different options, you know, going forward into the season. What movies are you looking for this? What are you looking for in your next, like, great LGBT movie? I do know that they're working on a documentary on Bayard Rustin, which will be really interesting.
Yes, to be honest, for me, the LGBTQ movies or content that I look forward to the most now is more on, I would say, the documentary side of it and just mm-hmm. telling our own history and telling it honestly and not whitewashing it or straightwashing it.
Right.
So that is what I look forward to most, because I feel that market on the creative side in terms of movies and television shows has really fallen off.
Right.
And I think that, you know, we really have to get back into, like, investing. I love a good rom-com too. That's why I'm wondering why you're watching the Hallmark Channel.
Well, because they're going to have content. And it'll give me something to talk about, that's for sure. But, you know, it's something that's important, right? Because I think someplace in the last pocket in, like, the last 15 years and before, where all the movies, unfortunately, had a lot of AIDS-related content, right? So it was always something depressing. There was nothing, yes. There was no happy life coming out of it, right?
The one thing that I will give the Hallmark Channel, and I will give a lot, you know, Netflix mm-hmm. and Hulu and all those kind of people, they are now making movies where
we live.
Being LGBTQ does not mean that your life is terrible.
Right.
And so I will give them that, and I am glad that it exists. I'm glad the content exists. It's not exactly what I'm looking for, but I am glad that it's out there, because the only way that we will get good content is if we just start making more.
I think we have the ability to make excellent content. So Bros and some of these other things, like even the stuff that, considering what we've contributed to the industry as a whole, as writers, as actors and things like that, that we can't come up with this, again, maybe some box office smash content that really people love, or, you know, I don't know if it's a Brokeback Mountain 2. No, it's not.
What I will say, and I don't want to compare them because they are two very different films, but they both came out relatively close to summer. One came out before, one came out now, is Fire Island. I felt was very good. I thought that the writing was a lot better. I thought the direction was a lot better. Yes, they rely on stereotypes here and there. Yes, they did. But the characters honestly felt more developed, and I felt like there were more stakes involved, and I felt like it was more interesting and dynamic than just watching two straight white guys somewhat fall in love and fall in and out of love and then end up together.
Wow, I'm glad I'm not straight. That's sounds very challenging. I like the idea that they are focusing on giving insight to the, you know, into the community. And maybe, you know, cliches is a good way to doing it, because it kind of makes it easier for people to digest, right? So you can digest something if you're laughing or if you think something's cute. So we'll see what happens, you know, going forward, as I will be very excited to see the movies that come out in 2023. Mm-hmm. But I always, you know, at this point right now, I think the challenge is going to be for everybody who wants to venture off into the big screen, or
something that I think is going to happen as a result of this movie and how it came out and how it's doing, is that you will get more content. You will see less of a hard focus. So the content will still come out,
okay,
but they won't push the LGBTQ issue as hard. They'll be just, oh, it's a rom-com, and it just happens to be too, like, they won't push the issue. They'll just have it be there.
Right.
So
they, well, is that good or bad, though?
That was part of the issue that people had when it came to the marketing, is that they felt the all over the place in what the movie actually was, which I agree, because you can't say that it is for everyone and then say that it's only for a certain people at the same time. Like, you can't be like, oh, this is a movie that everybody can watch. Oh, by the way, it's only about this thing that only these people understand.
All right, two most important questions.
What?
Would you see Bros again?
Yes.
And the second question is, are you going to watch the two LGBT holiday movies on the Hallmark channel? No?
That is undecided at this time.
Oh, okay.
I have watched them in the past.
I'm inviting you over, and we're going to have a...
We're going to have
an evening with popcorn in the Hallmark channel.
And
we're going to wear sweaters.
Listen.
Christmas sweaters.
I scoured the internet.
Christmas.